My other announcement is that I'm well. After like 9 days, that was one of those where I kept saying, tomorrow's going to be the day. And it kept being the next day, and then the next day, and 9 days later. Anyway, that was exhausting. And it's lovely to be here with you all. You have no idea. And I'm excited to continue on in our study of Hebrews. This is a book about endurance. It is a book about pressing on and continuing on, casting vision for us. We're reminded again and again in our text that the people that are receiving this have been struggling, that even some are considering kind of turning back, like it's just too much. And in this moment, the author steps forward and he's going to give this rallying cry. Keep going. Keep going. The passage that I was supposed to preach a couple weeks ago, Greg did a wonderful job of preaching last minute as I was just realizing, like, oh, I'm not going to make it tomorrow. I was just at the beginning of this. And I'm just so grateful for Greg. He not only is he able to step in and fulfill the pulpit, but he does it at the last minute. And this is the second time this year that he's had to do that. So anyway, so deeply grateful for somebody who not only can do that, but does it so well. And so much of Greg's heart, that's just the guy that steps in. So thank you, Greg, wherever you are. His granddaughter's here this morning, so if you get a chance to say hi, please do. Naomi. But our text today, I'm going to back up into those first verses because I think they're going to launch us kind of into this next section. So we're going to read 1 through 13. And in some ways, this is the heart of our whole book, or we might call it a long sermon. And some have said that Hebrews is written much more like a sermon with threads that are woven through and topics that kind of he returns to as he goes. But 12 is like the culmination of this. It's where you get this mighty therefore. Like after all of this that I've built, here's the point. He says this, therefore, since we have also such a large cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us lay aside every hindrance and the sin that so easily ensnares us. Let us run with endurance the race that lies before us, keeping our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. For the joy that lay before him, he endured the cross, despising the shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, so that you won't grow weary and give up. In struggling against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood, and you've forgotten the exhortation that addresses you as sons. My son, do not take the Lord's discipline lightly or lose heart when you are reproved by him. For the Lord disciplines the one he loves and punishes every son he receives. Endure sufferings as discipline. God is dealing with you as sons. For what son is there that a father does not discipline? But if you are without discipline, which all receive, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Furthermore, we had human fathers discipline us, and we respected them. Shouldn't we submit even more to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time based on what seemed good to them. But he does it for our benefit so that we share his holiness. No discipline seems enjoyable at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. Therefore, strengthen your tired hands and weakened knees and make straight paths for your feet so that what is lame may not be dislocated but healed instead. The word of the Lord. What do we learn from our text? If this is the culmination, what's the takeaway? And I think if there was just one, if you're going to like tie into one phrase, one image in all of this, it might be as simple as this. Life is a race. And this is different than what you feel like you might have signed up for. If somebody were to ask you that, what is like your metaphor for life? You might go, oh, life is a journey. Life is an adventure. Beautiful vistas, that rush of adrenaline. Life is a vacation. Just sitting back and enjoying, just taking in all the beauty. And all those things, certainly, they're like threads of truth in that. Life is a journey. Life is an adventure. And there are moments where, wow, there are some beautiful vistas. But if that's your view, then there will be moments in life that disrupt that narrative. And I think what's helpful about this is it's saying life is a race and it's not a sprint. It's an endurance race and it's hard. And right off the bat to these people that are already discouraged, why is he burdening them with this? Well, he's saying your expectations need to fit this reality. If they don't, what we tend to do is create a whole lot more grief on top of it all by our disappointment or our frustration, the grief that we like hold on to in our stress to try to control a story that ultimately in the end isn't true. I read this quote by George MacDonald. He was kind of the Lewis's like greatest influence was this guy. In our Great Divorce study, by the way, George MacDonald shows up in the story, and so we're going to meet him there. But George MacDonald says this. He says, everything difficult indicates something more than our theory of life yet embraces. Now, if you need to read that more than once, I did. So, everything difficult indicates something more than our theory of life yet embraces. And I read that quote as I was feeling so much disappointment in the last 9 days. Like, it's not just like a bummer to get sick, but there was like 3 things that happened that I was really looking forward to. You got to hear from my friend Ryan, this guy I'm just so proud of. I just really, like, love that guy's heart. And I was like, come out. He was going to be out here in the air, and I was like, come preach at the church. And then I'm like, dude, I'm sick. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I watched it from home. But I was like, oh, I really was looking forward to that. And it may sound silly, but like this study on Wednesday nights, I'm like really excited about it. So like Tuesday night, I sent an email to you all going like, we're still on. And Wednesday, I was like, we're off. And in all of these things, I share that because I'm like, oh, this is what I was hoping for. And then this is the way life ended up being. And I tell you that because, not that that's some sort of major deal, because I realize it's a small little thing, but I noticed something in myself, kind of with each thing that I had to cancel, that I stressed over it on the front end. But once I made the decision, I was like, actually kind of relieved. So I was like, I don't have what it takes to show up and do this. I don't have what it takes within me. And in some ways, it felt like I was being shown something. I was interesting because you go, life is this race. Get up and run this race. But I was like, then why am I getting benched? But in some ways, you're like, you feel like God's going, are you sure you're running the right race? Is the race about like me showing up and being able to do these things that I'm here to do? Or is there maybe something in this that I need? Maybe the challenge here is not showing up. Maybe the challenge is in realizing that like maybe my contribution isn't as important as I thought it was. That some of these things become a part of this inward race that God is calling me to run. I think so much of our disappointment is often this sense of like realizing our lack of control, that we can't just make these things happen. Or for me, it's this pain of disappointing others. I hate that feeling. And to go part of my race very much might be learning what's going on there. What is behind all of that? What am I being shown? In life, we experience these disappointments, and Hebrews is wonderful in going, don't worry, you're not alone. Plenty of people have run this before you. Plenty of people will run this after you. And something in there is comforting and humbling, right? I like how Richard Rohr, he says when he does like rites of passage as people are growing up, he gives them these like five principles that they all need to learn. It's like, you're not in control. Life is not about you. You're not that important. You're going to die, right? These things, and you're like, that's so horrible, right? But in some ways, you're like, oh, my race doesn't look like that at all. The race that I set before myself is one where I go, oh, I am kind of the central guy. I am the one everybody's rooting for. I am the one that everybody's like, we hope you win, Jeff, and get the trophy. And there's something to this, running in such a way that you'll win. But usually the trophies that I set out to reach are not the trophies that God has in mind. And Jesus comes in and doesn't just, well, he does two things. He sets out a race for us. And this is important that we run this together. But I think sort of embedded in that is he sets out a race for you. That your race is different than my race. But that all of us are running. But that he too has run. Part of the humility of this in Jesus is he's going, I'm going to come down onto this earth and I'm going to run. And then you guys watch me. Let me show you how you run this race. And when we look at it, we're like, oh, this is really hard. It's this way of the cross. It's this way of sacrifice. This way of laying down our life. Jesus is the pioneer of this race, and he's the perfecter, as Hebrews tells us. He sets the course, he shows us the way, and then he helps us run in such a way. So if my race doesn't look like Jesus' race, right, then I'm probably going to be constantly in this struggle and in this resistance. God, why this? Why that? Constantly frustrated. So accepting this race and the difficulty, the pain that comes with it. I'm not a runner. Some of you probably are. But Patty used to run for Fullerton College. And when we were dating, I remember we're both living in Fullerton. We'd drive around and Patty would be like, oh yeah, I used to throw up over there, right? This is what it's like to date Patty. She's just fearless, right? Like, that's where I threw up. But she's a distance runner, right? Which means you throw up. Like, that's what happens. You're running this race and your body's going to be like, what are we doing, right? But it's just part of it. It's like built in. You want to finish this race. You know it's going to be uncomfortable. You're going to have to learn how to manage the pain, not be afraid of it, learn how to address it. And this, to us, is an encouragement, but it's also like holding up casting vision for us. That discipline is required. That we have to train for this. Don't be surprised when life is hard. Look at Jesus and what he endured. And this is something that I love. If you want to talk about, like, what is the uniqueness of Christianity? I'll give you one. Like a God who comes down and runs this race as a human and suffers to model for us the way. That's unique. That is a unique facet of who God is. This humility and this sacrificial compassion that goes that far. It's a beautiful vision into our understanding of who God is. That God isn't this one that's sitting back sort of abstractly asking us to do something he's not willing to do. But God is somebody who enters in, and in such a way that he demonstrates all the sacrifice that comes with it. Our author's going, you haven't bled yet, right? But he did. And some might have thought that reference to blood, certainly you picture Christ on the cross there. But coupled with that is maybe an understanding within culture of this pentathlon that they would do that was more than just a running race. It involved throwing. It involved multiple different events. But one of those was like a wrestling thing where they would wear these like leather gloves and they would just pound each other, certainly to the point of blood. And in some ways, the author is going, I know this has been hard. Just know that it gets harder. which none of us like to hear. I remember reading that in a leadership book. It was on like tempering, and it was saying like life is going to get really hot, and it's going to be refining you, and it's going to do this sort of work. And I was reading it going like, oh yeah, that feels right. And then he goes, just know it's going to get hotter than that. It's going to get worse than that. That's not the end. You're like in the middle at that point. And sometimes we're like, oh my gosh, but this is more than I can bear. Have you ever felt that way? I mean, I feel that way. I've got this like little victim voice in my head that's like, I think I'm suffering more than anybody else. I love this meme that like shows up every once in a while, which is like this prayer where the person is like, God, why do you give your hardest trials to me? Have you seen this one? And then God's response is, I don't. You're actually one of my weakest angels. It's just an email. And I'm thinking, oh yeah, that's probably true. Why me, God? He's like, Jeff, it's just an email, right? So, and I think of all of this, right? And I go, it's where I find as I'm going through our text, there's a shift that comes here. And this is not, shouldn't surprise us by now. The author of Hebrews, he goes back and forth between these two voices, like knock it off to this voice of like, my dear brothers and sisters. Right? So it goes this like exhortation to compassion, to exhortation to compassion. And here he goes, you've forgotten this. And then he, the author of Hebrews is very good at quoting scripture. He goes back to a proverb and he says, you've forgotten this. And he quotes this, my son, do not take the Lord's discipline lightly or lose heart when you're reproved by him. For the Lord disciplines the one he loves and punishes every son he receives. And see, just at this moment where we're feeling like, gosh, what's the matter with me? Why can't I run this thing? Like I should be beyond this now. He reframes it in such a way that he goes, don't forget that you're just a little kid. And I love this as we hear this voice of like God as a coach going like, get back in there. All of a sudden we realize, oh, this is like an AYSO game. As we're picturing like the LA Marathon, we're like, no, this is the El Moro Jogathon. Right? That this exhortation, this moment of inspiration is given to kids. I put this picture up and I was thinking, this is what came to mind for me. This is my girl Mia, right? Which she's, I don't know, how old are you there? Like six? Like, and wanted to play goalie. And I was like, honey, you're going to get destroyed. Like, that ball's just going to blow you straight back into the net. Like, this tiny little kid out there wanting to play goalie. But I go, I think it's helpful at this point where he's going, you've forgotten that's you, right? Like as God is sitting there and he's giving instruction, to her. As he's going like, ah, this is too hard, right? This is spoken with a softness. Since Lila's not here, Lila, when she would play AYSO, she would go out and she would run hard for 5 minutes and then she'd be like, take me out, coach. I'm exhausted. And the coach would be like, it's like literally 5 minutes into the game. She's like, my legs just can't keep going, right? And I think sometimes this must be what our prayers are like. Like, God, take me out. I'm exhausted. And he's like, we're literally 5 minutes into the game. I think you could run a little bit further. And this parent that is disciplining, because he's going to look at this child and go, oh, you're capable of so much more. You're a lot stronger than you realize. But at the same time, like, can't help but sort of smile on the inside, right? When we see our kids behaving, even when they're not behaving well. Lila would always yell at the ref. And I'd be like, oh, Lila, she's six. And she's like, that wasn't offsides, right? Or like, actually, that ball was out. And the ref would be like, really? Like, you know, like she saw it a certain way. And I remember like yelling from the sidelines one time, honey, stop yelling at the ref. And the mom next to me goes, you go, girl. And I was like, that's probably the better advice, actually. These little kids in there, you've forgotten that, like, when God is doing these things, why does he do it? Well, he does it out of love. That's the reminder. He does it because he knows what's best. And so he's giving us some warnings here. He's telling us, you know, be careful that we don't take that discipline the wrong way. And Proverbs gives us some great little windows into this. It's going to say, don't make light of it and don't lose heart. And I was thinking, oh, those are different things, aren't they? To make light of discipline, to sort of diminish its importance or it's no big deal. We were talking about this in the Great Divorce class, that there's a sort of beauty to stoicism. You kind of see that becoming revitalized. People like Ryan Holiday are writing a lot about it. And I think, honestly, a lot of what Jesus taught was very stoic in this sort of posture of detachment. But I think in some ways, stoicism has got this like, it's neither good nor bad, it just is. Right? We're just not going to make light of these circumstances. We're just not going to get ruffled. We're just going to act as if this doesn't matter. But if it's discipline, then it does matter. We are being shown something. We don't want to turn our gaze away from the discipline, but to learn from it. Don't make light of it or pretend it's not a thing. Pay attention to it. It's showing you something, and something really important. How is God, through this, loving me and nurturing me in a certain direction? There's meaning to discipline. That God has something behind it that he wants to show us. So we don't take it lightly. We take it significantly. But also we don't lose heart. And I think about this from a parenting standpoint, right? Like to lose heart, it's like saying to your kid, I'm sorry, I warned you, but because of that behavior, you don't get to go to the birthday party. And you know that kid that's like, I didn't even want to go to the birthday party. Right? Like, I don't even care. And I think this, like, we lose heart thing. It's like, shh, whatever. Right? God's showing us something, and you're like, I don't even care. I'm like, I'm so sick of this. Right? And the thing is, like, oh, no. This is coming in a way that's loving, like that defense mechanism to hold something at bay. I always think of my son with this because when he was in kindergarten, they had this reward system there where it's the El Moro seals. And so they would give them seal boxes like rewards, and then you would gain 20 of those, and then you could buy a prize with them, right? So here's a little incentive. I'm sure for Mia, she was like, what's the price for the person who gets the most seal box? But Gabe, like, he opens up the chest and he's like, never mind. Like, handed him the seal box, but didn't even take a prize. And at the end of the year, you open up his backpack and it's filled with seal box. Like, and you're going, oh, this didn't work on my son, right? Like, he looked at those prizes and he was like, nah. But I think in some ways here, like I say that jokingly, but this sort of losing heart, right? That we can either diminish the discipline or we can just detach from caring about these things. As we go through disappointments and frustrations, we're like, you know what, I'm just going to not even worry about any of this. And he's going, no, this is for your benefit. The verse here, he does it for our benefit so that we can share his holiness. No discipline seems enjoyable at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. And holiness sounds a little bit like, how do I get my wings? And it's not that. Holiness is like, how do I become whole? How do I become my full self, my best self? As God looks at that little child, he's like, oh, I see you. This is who you are. This is who you're becoming. How do we surrender to that work? Well, it's yielding to the discipline. He's going, you've all surrendered to parents who have done this, and quite honestly, imperfectly. I was thinking about that the other day. My mom called me up, and it's really tender. She's like, Jeff, I feel like there's some things that I just need to apologize for about how we raised you. And I remember thinking, I had just been thinking about my own kids, and I was like, no kidding, right? And it was like, all of a sudden, it was like not mother and son, it was like parent to parent, where I'm like, she was like, we did the best we could, and I'm like, yeah, no kidding, right? That you're going, parenting's hard, and you're like, you think you're doing what's best, and sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong, sometimes you're accidentally right. And you're like, hey, wow, that worked out, right? And you're like, no thanks to you. Sometimes we screw up and we don't even know why. It's like stuff that's totally off of our radar. But to go, parents do hopefully love their kids, even though imperfectly. But God is parenting you perfectly. That God knows just what you need so that you can be made whole and complete, not lacking anything. If you were grading this sermon, you might criticize it here because he's like going metaphor to metaphor, right? You're not supposed to mix your metaphors, and he clearly does, like race to parenting, and now he adds a third one, the sower. But what I like about that is there's a thread of discipline in all of those. Maybe that's more the hidden theme. There's a discipline with training, and there's a discipline with children. But lastly, there's this discipline of the sower who's planting these seeds with this anticipation of what's to come. I remember seeing a seed packet that Patty had and looking on there and said, don't expect to see anything for 100 days. I'm thinking, oh, that's one of the disciplines of sowing a garden. You put this in there and you're like, it's going to be over 3 months before you see anything. But this idea of these moments of discipline, realizing something similar, like God is sowing a seed in here. It's not just a correction, but it's this anticipation of something that's to grow. This formation. And here he throws these metaphors out and doesn't give us a ton of explanation. But I think that's because for the people, they were so familiar with these metaphors, and not just like somehow contextually, but like the church was using these metaphors. If you go look at Paul's writings, he's going to talk about a race. He's going to talk about fruit. You look at Jesus and he's going to talk about sowing. That these were the metaphors that they held on to. And this idea of a harvest of righteousness, they would have just known this is just Galatians 5. Where Paul says these familiar words, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. The law is not against such things. A lot of you probably have that list memorized. Some of you can even sing a little song to it. This is the fruit. This is the harvest of righteousness. And in the end, this is the trophy. This is the thing you're running towards. That as you run, as you train, as you're building strength, what are you building? That's the goal. And so often, that's not what we pay attention to, right? We pay attention to experience and talent and, you know, education and doing things to build a resume, so where we're like, oh, look at all the significant things that I've done. Look at all the trophies that I've collected. Look at the race that I've run. But God's going, those aren't the trophies. That's like the toys you get in the little seal box container, right? That's the stuff that doesn't last. That's like fine as a byproduct. But the real race, the real thing that we're being disciplined towards is that harvest. That each one of those becomes a description of our heart, a heart that loves and is full of joy, that responds in peace, responds with patience, kindness, goodness, right? How much of that is just the natural outflowing of your heart? How much of that describes your response? Like, I know I use this too much, but I always think, Dahlia and Glen Eyrie, like when two cars go on the stop sign and you're like, it's cool. How many of you respond that way? I don't. I'm like, are you kidding me? Seriously? Like, you think you're better than me? going to offend my rights, right? And you're like, oh, what a lovely little discipline. What a lovely opportunity. And this is how discipline works, by the way. We're like, God, give me these things. And he's like, okay, go drive through that stop sign and let like three cars go. Right? That'd be a good exercise. How do I respond patiently? Or I get cut off and my response is like, it's okay, it's cool. Like, don't worry. And I'm just kind. I want to be more kind. That my heart is like soft and gentle. When other people, I disagree with whatever it is. I don't like the way they believe, or I don't like this thing, or I don't approve of this behavior. I'm like, I hope my response is gentle. I hope that it's self-controlled. And God's going, perfect. That's the plan. That's what we're working on. That your life is this race, and it's teaching you how to be this kind of person. So when it gets hard, this is what we're leaning into. How do we pay attention? How do we follow those things to the real goal? What is it that God wants us to be growing in right now? It's probably one of that list. So to see our life in this as the opportunities and the invitations. God, what is it here that you want me to see when I feel hurt or wounded or let down or betrayed? Sometimes I think for me, as I talk about this, like the disappointment of not showing up is really about this, like, oh, just letting these things go, right? Trusting, like, oh, God, you're in control. And maybe sometimes it's good for me to actually step away for a minute. There's things within me that get exercised. I was thinking about this, so I just made like a little graph of this, kind of our goals versus God's goals. And as we look at the discipline and we try to understand, God, what are you up to? It's going to be that line on the left. And this point maybe has already been plenty spoken to, but I was just thinking that line on the left, at least, sorry, is what we pay attention to, and that line on the right being God's, and how so often those things are in conflict with each other, right? That when we're seeking after achievement, it like prevents our ability from loving others. When we're consumed with productivity, we lose our joy. When we're obsessed with control, we lose our peace. When we pursue efficiency, we become impatient. When we seek influence, we lose our kindness. When we try for visibility, we lose our goodness, right? Our motives change. The recognition versus faithfulness, power versus gentleness, pleasures versus self-control. That's that George MacDonald quote, right? When we're disappointed that we're not as efficient as we thought, right? He's going, you got the wrong race. You're pursuing the wrong trophy. You're after the wrong thing. And with this gardening metaphor, I think there's some reassurance in both of these. The discipline is like, remember, you're just still kids. The gardening metaphor reminds us that this takes a while. That oftentimes this kind of meaningful change takes time. Which is why it's an endurance race. We would love it to be like a one shot. Give me the shortcut. Give me the quick TED talk on how to be more loving. And let me just, boom, I got that. On to the next thing. But we live our ways into this. If we stick with our metaphor, we run our way into this. It's about day after day after day. But we have this Father speaking into us this affirmation. This is a unique name that it gives to God in this section. It's nowhere else in the New Testament. It refers to the Father of Spirits. And this is the reminder that we run this life not just to like hit the end as far as like run till death, but we like run all the way into the next life. That this idea of spirits, why should we not follow the Father of spirits and live. And this to me is always such an important reminder for us that what God wants in us is freedom. Oh my gosh, a couple came up today that we've been praying for the last month and a half about a situation that's just legitimately in their life, legitimately offensive. And they're like, help, help. Like, give me patience. Help me know how to respond. Help me set good boundaries, you know, and all of that. But they came forward today. And they were like, oh my gosh, we just prayed and God said, just forgive. Just forgive them. And you could just see it, like this lightness in their step. And the wife said, I feel like I just got born again. And I was thinking, oh, I think that's what this feels like when we overcome something. Like, that's what life feels like. It's why he starts by, like, lay aside this junk that is encumbering you. That when we run our race well, when we let this discipline cut away the stuff that's getting in our way, it's entangling us, it's slowing us down. There's just a sense of freedom in that. A lightness and a beauty to that. And this is what God wants for all of us. A joy in the midst, like he's running it with us. He's not just sitting back, arms folded, going, well, we'll see. But right in there with us, going, you got this. And I love this. That God has done this, he knows this well, because he fathered his own son on this race. And now fathers us. What is our response? Wherever you are in this reminder from Hebrews again and again and again is going to be, don't give up. Keep going. Keep going. Trust the slow work of God. Trust that God knows just what you need. But this is not like merely pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. Like, come on, Jeff. It's a matter of really leaning in and saying help. These last couple of verses, I think, are so good because as he's built this discipline, he's going, discipline like an athlete, discipline like a parent, discipline like a farmer. What do you do? And then he's going to say this. He's going to say, you train. And what do you train? And he says, train your hands and your knees. Strengthen your hands and strengthen your knees. And I thought, these to me are such beautiful symbols of the work. How do you strengthen your hands? I think you do it by just being generous. By extending to others. Whether it's that forgiveness, you think of Jesus at probably the high point of his race. Is this moment where in all of the anguish that he experiences on the cross, he turns to the people and he says, Father, forgive them. That those hands that open up, those hands that give, those hands that serve, even sometimes when we don't feel it, we're like, I don't feel loving. And you're like, well, just show up. Just go to that space, go meet that need and see what happens. So often the work happens as we're doing the sort of external. Like, use your hands and strengthen your knees. Such a reminder of the posture of this kneeling, this getting on our knees to pray, to surrender, to say, even though I don't get it, I'm going to trust you. And lastly, make the way straight behind you. And this one is cool. Like, I think it's giving some vision, not just to the fact that we're like running in the midst of a cloud of witnesses cheering us on, but there are others that are going to come behind us. How do we make their way straight? I've said this before, and usually when I say it, people are like, what? That doesn't make sense. But I always think your suffering is your authority, which sounds a little bit weird, doesn't it? You're like, you can keep your authority. But the truth is, when you've been through something, in some ways, you're the only relevant voice in the room when somebody else is going through the same thing, especially real suffering. If you've lost somebody close to you, if you've endured some painful illness, if you've been through that thing where you're like, what in the world, God, why am I going through this? One of the most beautiful things is seeing somebody who has endured turn to somebody who's in pain and say, you're going to be okay. This is going to be all right. Or maybe not say anything. Just be there and present going, I know. This making the way straight is going, not only do we have people helping us carry our load, but we have this opportunity to turn around and lend a hand to those who are struggling. It's part of one of the gifts of being the church, that we run the race set before us. We do it by encouraging each other, taking heart in those who have gone before, but not forgetting the ones who come after. Wherever you are in your life, whatever disappointments that you're facing, or discouragements, or areas you've been let down, that maybe they're not punishment, but they're pruning. Maybe they're not failures, but they're formation. And the reminder in this passage of how you are seen, God goes, you're my kid, and I love you. And you'll never stop being that all the way to the end of the race. That's who you are. And God comes in, and when he speaks to us, he speaks to his beloved child with a father whose eyes are full of pride, a God who's just always cheering you on. Here's my questions for you today. I know that seems a little dense. Take a picture if you need to. They're in your app, too. Where in your life are you feeling discouraged or disappointed? Can you identify what is the unmet expectation behind the pain? And maybe does this pain reveal a deeper need or entitlement? I think so often our anger is this response, like, this is not the way I thought life would be. Our frustration, what was that? What was the expectation? Are you able to sit with God with that? Number two, how might God be parenting you in this situation? It said here, it might even help to picture yourself as a little kid. Looking at the fruit of the Spirit, is there an area you feel God wanting you to grow? Is there an unhealthy pattern in your life that God might be trying to correct? And that all those are a gift. Hard to let go at first. Sometimes a little painful, maybe even a little embarrassing. But God's saying, you can trust me with that. Something in us that's just too small, it's getting in our way. Lastly, as you think about moving forward, what are some ways that you could lean into training and developing the muscles God is already challenging you to use? How could you intentionally practice the fruit of the Spirit in ways that will create endurance and joy? Maybe you look down that list of the fruit and go, what's the one, God? What one are we working on right now? If you're like me, you're like, let's train the one I'm good at to be even better. And God's usually like, nope. We're training the one you're weakest at. The one that feels the most awkward, right? That's how we become whole. By focusing on those things that are our least natural tendency. So maybe you just pick one and sit with that and look through that lens as you experience these kind of difficulties in life. God, what are you trying to teach me in this area? And how can I be more like Jesus in this area? The author and perfecter of our faith. Would you stand with me? We are back on this Wednesday for our class. Please come. Chapters all the way through 8. We're going to do that whole section, but they're short, tiny little chapters. But I look forward to it with y'all. We have lunch after, as always. Stick around, enjoy, get to know somebody that you haven't met. Thank you for being here. As you go, I pray God would bless you and that God would keep you, that he'd make his face shine on you and be gracious to you, and that he'd lift up his countenance on you and give you peace. Amen.